Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of the CNC Football Factory podcast. We are live right now talking NFL draft. We just wrapped up a great three-day weekend of NFL drafting. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the sports world outside of football. We're going to be concentrating on the New York Jets and how they did this year in the NFL draft. I'm Carlos Sardinas. I'm joined by my host here, Mr. One, CJ, the painkiller, D. Simone. CJ, how are you feeling today after this whirlwind of a draft?
I am feeling really, really good. Believe it or not, I do have to say overall first impressions of the New York Jets draft for this year, very, very, very positive. I like the direction that Mike Maccagnan is going. I like the picks. They're very, very solid. He even did some wheeling and dealing, which got us a couple of other picks,
along with a couple of other players. The thing with this year's picks, compared to, say, last year or even the year before, I think the past 2 years when we had Idzik picks, I really had to talk myself into liking them. And in some cases, there were some machinations going on just to get me to get on board, and in some cases, I just wasn't. You know, when I didn't look at any of the picks until maybe very late. I question a couple of them. But I don't look at any of the picks and scratch my head and say, man, I don't know what they're thinking there. I mean, do you remember last year when we picked our first-round pick, you know, everyone was talking about wide receiver. Everyone was talking about, you know, we need some help on the edge rush. We ended up taking Calvin Pryor, which he may turn out to be just fine, but I remember just kind of being floored by it. At that position going that high, I was a bit surprised. I had to talk myself into it.
Yeah, see, when you have to talk yourself into why the Jets took a particular player at a particular spot, such as Calvin Pryor, like you made it, then you know overall it's not really a good pick. Now, you know, again, like you just alluded to, Calvin Pryor could turn out to be gangbusters and he could actually turn out to be one of the premier safeties in the NFL. Only time will tell. But at the time when you selected him, you know that you had particular needs, team needs, glaring team needs, and really didn't address them in last year's draft. So whereas
this is why you're a consummate professional, my friend, because that's the perfect segue into the New York Jets' first pick. So the Jets pick number 6, and the board kind of fell out like a lot of people thought it might. There was some speculation around pick number 2, whether Tennessee was going to trade out of that pick, pick Mariota, do something else.
The board fell out? Does what? The word Chernobyl ring a bell?
Well, I mean, everyone kind of figured Jameis Winston was going to Tampa Bay, right? Most people thought that.
Yeah, that was a foregone conclusion, but, you know, a lot of people were speculating what the Tennessee Titans were going to do with that number 2 pick. Were they going to trade out? Was there going to be a possibility that they were going to make a deal with San Diego to acquire Phillip Rivers, and they were going to, second overall pick was going to be part of the package deal in order to acquire Rivers, and, you know, everybody and their mother had Mariota going to the Jets. And it was just a complete and utter, you know, who's who of speculation. And as soon as the Tennessee Titans picked Marcus Mariota 2nd overall, the only thing I remember hearing is just the nuclear fallout sirens. And then all
was that coming out of Philadelphia by any chance?
Yeah, probably.
But, I mean, you look at the rest of the board. Dante Fowler, a lot of people figured Jacksonville would take him if he was there. Amari Cooper, a lot of people figured the Raiders would take him if he was there. I think where it gets interesting, where it actually helped out the Jets a little bit, is the Redskins going with Brandon Scherff at 5. at the offensive tackle. I think that's what opened up some options for the Jets. That they, even Mike Maccagnan said in his presser, he didn't expect Leonard Williams to be sitting there. And you know, I didn't either. I thought if he slipped to five, the Redskins would take him there. But they didn't. And the New York Jets were faced with really a big decision. And so in my head, I had it broken down to about three players that I thought Maccagnan had to choose between. You have the best player in the draft, widely regarded overall, in Leonard Williams, who could line up anywhere on the defensive line. But it's a position of strength. We already have Mo Wilkerson. We already have Sheldon Richardson. We already have Big Snacks Dame, Damon Harrison. We have Legay Doosable. I mean, we have a strong defensive line, but they valued him above some other picks. Who else would I consider around there? Kevin White and Vic Beasley. This is actually the three I figured, if they're there, that's who they're picking between. I can't knock the team at all for picking Leonard Williams. If they believe he's the best player on the board or best player in the draft, you can't knock that. You know, and they did some things later on that I think helped assuage some of the fears and meet some of the other needs. But this was actually picking in a position of strength, adding more strength. So I want to ask you, CJ, what do you think about the selection of Leonard Williams?
I think, believe it or not, Leonard Williams at that point was the best player available at that time in the draft, one of the best players out there, if not the best player in the draft at that particular point in time. So, you know, it was a no-brainer for the Jets to go to get Leonard Williams. They made no secret that they were interested in Leonard Williams. You know, he seemed to like what he seemed to have been enamored with the Jets during his pre-draft visit. So there was real speculation as to who the Jets were going to take with the sixth pick. And I was surprised because Kevin White was still on the board. And I thought for sure Kevin White was going to get picked number six. But
well, I think that would have probably been the case, him or Beasley, would have been the case if Leonard Williams wasn't sitting there. You know, but that's the thing. You have to adjust. And the best player in the draft fell to you. You notice, actually, how long it took. Yeah, I don't know if you were watching the draft or not, but I was watching when it was going on. How long it took for the Jets to put in their selection. I mean, it went down to the last second if you watch the timer. So that tells me the Jets were also looking at and fielding calls for anyone that might want to move up. In the end, they must have not gotten what they wanted in terms of any kind of trade value. So Mike Maccagnan and the crew put in the selection for Leonard Williams. So now here's the downstream effect of that before we even get into the second round, third round, fourth round. How do you manage adding a talent such as Williams to an already crowded defensive line?
You could do position rotation. I mean, again, at this point, we still don't know exactly what's going to happen with the fate of Mo Wilkerson right now. You know, odds are, I think the Jets are going to make him a lucrative offer. I just don't see them not making him an offer because Maccagnan has stated that he wants Mo as a part, you know, he wants Mo on this team, and he wanted to wait till after the draft in order to re-enter negotiations. I have a feeling before OTAs, they will hammer out a long-term deal. I don't see them not signing Mo Wilkerson or, you know, if the right offer, sort of like, I hate to use a line from The Godfather, but if somebody makes them an offer they can't refuse with multiple first-round draft picks, you know, then I could see them possibly moving Wilkerson, but I just don't see him going anywhere. I think that they get a deal done. I think that that offensive line, Todd Bowles, not the offensive line, the defensive line, Todd Bowles is just going to – he's probably licking his chops like, I cannot wait to work with these guys. And just the schemes, the pass rush schemes that he's probably going to design. I mean, if you thought they were blitz-heavy now – you know, if you thought they were blitz-heavy before, watch out. We could have – you know, and I dare to say this, we may, in fact, be witnessing the rebirth of the New York sack exchange in the green and white.
Well, you know, Leonard Williams, he has the talent to do almost anything he wants to on the field. He could definitely use some improvement in rushing the passer just a little bit in terms of technique, because he kind of fits the Sheldon Richardson mold, but he could do it all. He really can. He could line up at the edge of the 3-4, be an end, or be a tackle on the 4-3. He could do a lot of different things, though. He's been compared to a lot of great players. The only concern I have for him is that, you know, he does have a little bit of a shoulder issue coming off of this year. Hopefully he recovers from that and does well. I think it's an exciting time. I would have liked to address a position of need, sure, but you can't pass up a talent, especially if you think he's going to be special. I welcome him to the team. I think the New York did very well in the first round, didn't panic, tried to make a move to see if anyone wanted to move up, but ultimately that didn't work. And, you know, got themselves a heck of a football player. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Did. Yes, they did. So,
and that's,
thing,
that's all
Carlos,
you want to do.
Another thing, too, is that the benefit with having Leonard Williams with the sixth pick is, because of the fact that our defensive line is already stout as it is, the Jets have the benefit of bringing him along slowly, something that is not really in the New York Jets vocabulary. Okay, as we move on further, you know, when we start talking about other picks, if you take a look at a great deal of the picks that the Jets have, they have the benefit of being able to get guys acclimated to the speed of the pro game and not exactly taking them and throwing them in the deep end of the pool, needing them to produce right away.
Right, and that was a strategy that was employed the last couple of years, is we draft someone, you're starting, buddy, because we don't have enough talented people on
this
team.
Exactly.
We addressed some of that with the free agency, obviously, so that helped McKagan kind of target the best player available. And you hear that term all the time. But in this case, I think he actually stuck to his guns, because it could have been very tempting to pick a position of need like a Vic Beasley, who's a pretty good pass rusher, but that's pretty much what he does. And you would end up passing up on potentially an all-pro talent like Leonard Williams. So, you know, I'm on board. I think that's a good pick. Once the way I saw the board breaking down as it was going on, I kind of figured, all right, we're probably going to pick him because he's going to be there. And as soon as Scherf went, I definitely knew it. I'm like, wow, this is going to be crazy. We're going to have one crazy defensive line. So let me ask you, before we move on to the second round, just some other considerations. So in terms of rotating Leonard Williams, you know, some people have asked, hey, can we switch to a 4-3? We're going to play 3-4. Is Todd Bowles going to adjust his defensive scheme? I don't think switching to the 4-3 really highlights the talents of his particular defensive line. I agree with you. You can have Leonard Williams kind of rotate in and spell Richardson or Wilkerson, you know, and have him play, you know, like 60% of the snaps, which is similar to what Aaron Donald did last year in St. Louis. And they still had a heck of a defensive line. They were rotating in and out too. So it's not a problem, but I personally don't see them adjusting the defense this late in the game to be a 4-3. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But I wanted to ask you what you thought about that other alternative. I agree more. Rotating in and out is the best way to go, especially for a young kid like this. Let him be in on significant plays, but not overburden him. Maybe bring down the rate of when you have Richardson and Williams, or Richardson and Wilkerson in, you know, maybe bring down their snap total just a little bit, spell them a little bit more, because they were on the field a lot.
Yeah, they were. And see, the thing is that now, again, as I alluded to about rotating players in and out, when you're able to do that, you keep guys fresh for longer periods of time. And, you know, especially in no-huddle situations, you want your best players on the field. Now, at that point, you know, one of the biggest things is you're starting to see different teams. They try to do that quick snap count, try to catch, you know, the defense in the midst of a personnel change to try to get the matchups that they want or the mismatches, sort of like a linebacker on a wide receiver or you know, a defensive lineman on a wide receiver, or, you know, they try to pull that whole ineligible play. In the midst of a substitution where the New England Patriots did that during the playoffs. You know, there are many different things to take into account. But if you have enough players to rotate in and out, then, you know, stamina no longer becomes an issue. Or having guys like, defense is on the field for a long time, they're going to be gassed and they're going to be tired. Being able to rotate guys in and out will keep guys fresher for a little bit longer, and you'll be able to use your top players, you know, to get the matchups that you want.
Absolutely. Yeah, having depth along the defensive line is not a bad problem to have at all. The Giants won a couple Super Bowls with that strategy, so it's definitely worked out for other teams in the past. I don't mind the selection at all. Let's move on to the second round. The second round, I actually am a little bit excited about the selection the New York Jets made. So picking 37th, they picked Devin Smith out of Ohio State. He is a speed receiver, and I'm talking about super crazy speed. He gives us exactly what we do not have on the roster in terms of wide receiver big play ability, and he's also very good in the special teams return game as a gunner. Listen to this stat. Devin Smith's yards per catch last year. Just take a guess at what the average was.
I believe when I looked at it, it's some like ridiculous number, like 28 point something percent.
It is 28.2 yards per catch, which is just insane. It's absolutely insane. He had 33 catches for 931 yards and 12 touchdowns. The kid can run, and we've sorely not had that. You could talk about Salim Akeem and all these other scrubs that we've had in the past, but Devin Smith gives us a wow factor, a stretch-the-field guy. And he's also not just that. I mean, he could definitely use polishing his intermediate route running, but the kid could run 9 different routes. I mean, he's pretty good. He needs a little bit of time to develop in the overall game, but he could contribute right away in special teams and stretching the field on 4 wide receiver sets. Think about having Brandon Marshall on one end, Eric Decker on the other, Curley on one in the slot, and Devin Smith on the other side, stretching the field.
Yeah, absolutely. So, real quick, before I start talking about the wide receivers there and Devin Smith, got a tweet over there from Haas, at Haasboy on Twitter. He's trying to listen to our podcast live, and apparently he's having an issue with the sound. Ladies and gentlemen, if anybody's listening live at this point, it could possibly be a BTR issue. Try refreshing your feed and see if you can get that sound. If not, please let us know. Hit us up on Twitter at CNC Jets Factor. You know, you could always communicate with us there. Or, of course, you know, give us a call live, 917-889-7042. We'll try and get you on the air. So definitely want to give our live listeners a shout out there. Now, getting back to Devin Smith, when I saw that the average yards per catch, and especially with the fact that this kid is just a true burner. I mean, how long has it been since the Jets have had a true burner, Carlos? Come on, tell me the truth.
Really? The last guy I remember running that was actually that quick, I got to say it was like Santana Moss or something. I mean, it's been a long time. Maybe there's someone in between there that I can't think of right now, but it's been a long time. Does that sound about right to you? I mean, I can't remember anything else.
I'm going to go back further than that. I'm going to go back to the 1998 season when Bill Parcells was our head coach. A little guy by the name of Dietrich Ward wore number 89. A lot of people seem to overlook him, but man, let me tell you something. For a little guy, he was able to rip the top off of defenses. He just was just one of those guys that if you blinked, he was gone. That's how fast he was.
I totally agree with you. I agree with you. I was just thinking of the latest one and the last one I could remember.
Oh, yeah, the latest one?
Yeah, Boss.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else. It was really a burner.
Yeah, definitely Santana Moss. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody who's on the roster right now, you could bring up Salim Hakeem, but you know what? He's really an unproven commodity. Yeah, he's fast, and that's great, but it's really an unproven commodity.
I guess technically, what, the 7 games or 6 games we had from Percy Harvin, but, I mean, really,
yeah,
for having a burner,
too.
You know, the whole season, someone on your roster from beginning to end and contributing, you know, I can't think of another one after Santana Moss. So I like the pick of Devin Smith. If you look at the board afterwards, I think the only other question you could kind of put out there on this pick is, if you were going to go wide receiver, you could make the argument that Doriel Green Beckham was also out there, who's also a big play vertical threat. He's taller, and he's definitely talented. He could go up and challenge for the ball. But I think the off-field issues is something that was very big for Mike Maccagnan in the draft evaluation process. And I think he might not have been ruled off completely off the board, but I think the character came into question with that particular selection.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's move on. And let's talk a little bit about the Jets' third-round selection. I think one of the good things is that the draft progresses here. More and more you find some of these guys that could potentially contribute right away and good value overall in most of the selections here. So in the third round, the Jets actually traded down from the number 70 pick. And they traded with Mike Maccagnan's old team, the Houston Texans. They moved down 12 spots to 82. They picked up a fifth rounder and a seventh rounder. And they also got Trevier Parker, I want to say that's his name, from Houston, who comes in to compete for a spot on the roster, someone that Maccagnan's familiar with. So the Texans ended up taking Jalen Strong, who is a player I liked, but I like what we got back in return more. We're able to move down to 82 and select a player that addresses a need at the outside linebacker position. And we actually talked about this player on one of our latest podcasts. It was Lorenzo Malden, outside linebacker from Louisville. Really like this kid. We talked about him. And actually, Biff Sweeney from No Fly Zone turned me onto this kid listening to his podcast. I kind of checked him out afterwards. And he does a lot of different things well. He could rush the passer. He could cover. He could stop the run. He's not great in any one thing, but he does a lot of things well and has a chance to contribute as a rookie, which very nice job in my opinion. We had him highlighted on our show before. I really like the Lorenzo Malden pick, plus the haul we received. So, CJ, what do you think about the kid? I mean, we talked about him a little bit, but why don't you give your thoughts about that particular selection, the trade, and everything else?
Well, I'm actually going to give you my thoughts, and especially about the trade in a little bit. Plus, on top of it, I do have to give you props for, definitely picking that the Jets would get Maldin. And it looks like that we have a caller on the air, and I want to get him on because it's I'm so psyched to hear his thought about it. So I'm seeing over here that you're already there. And we're going to be bringing on our caller in a second, but I have to say one thing. Maldin, Maldin. Lorenzo Maldin's going to be—he's going to be a tremendous asset to the New York Jets. Definitely bolsters that linebacking core. I mean, they definitely got younger. They got a good speed guy, a good rush guy. It's really going to be incredible what the Jets are going to do with him, especially if they can build around him, get some other pieces to complement what he brings to the table. Plus the trades. I mean, let me tell you something. Maccagnan's just a beast over there with those trades. I was actually very, very surprised and very happy to see that he was doing his doing his magic, wheeling and dealing, and making sure that they put us all in a good position to succeed. So I mean, it was very refreshing to see that Maccagnan was like, oh my goodness, He just had these calm, cool, meticulous decisions. Like, he knew who he wanted. He was going to do whatever he wanted to get. And the good thing about it, Carlos, you know, this was one of the things I always criticized John Idzik about. John Idzik always had a plan A, okay, but never had a plan B, never had a plan C, never had a plan D, never had a plan E, okay, where, like, Maccagnan was like, okay, plan A is out the window, let's go to plan B, scan down, okay, this, it doesn't look good, let's go to plan C, okay, we're going to do this, and okay, we'll pull the trigger, bang.
Well, it helps having a familiarity with scouting. So, I mean, it helps having plans by knowing how to evaluate players. And, frankly, I'm encouraged because, really, this is kind of his first draft. He still has some of the old regime helping him out. I mean, he implemented his own staff, don't get me wrong. But there's still bits and pieces from the old guard contributing to that. And give him a year and then let him go through the draft process again. I think it'll even be better. CJ, I want to bring on a special guest who's calling in all the way from the other side of the globe. It's actually, I was just mentioning him about the No Fly Zone Radio. We actually have one of the hosts on the line. It is Mr. Biff Sweeney. Biff.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, I was going to say welcome to the show. And just want, we're doing wonderful, man. It's been a great weekend of NFL draft. Definitely want to hear your thoughts on just players selected across the board. Are you feeling good about it? Is there any particular picks you like? I'm sorry? Biff, can you hear us okay?
You're breaking up on me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, good.
Yeah, there was a few now I liked, but... I like the Bryce Petty pick because they didn't panic and they didn't like most of the media thought Bryce Petty and most of the quarterbacks were going to go in the second round after the top two. Now the Jets just traded up one spot to the Jags and took them, and it doesn't really put much pressure on the kids coming in to play behind Geno and Fitzpatrick going in the fourth round. Now, I was happy with that. Who else is there? I don't know much about Jarvis Harrison now, the offensive guard. I don't have a clue who Deion Sanders is, the North tackle.
But,
Leonard Williams now, that was a shock because I didn't think he was going to get past Washington.
Right. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I don't think the Jets really thought he was going to get past Washington.
Oh.
And when he's sitting there, it's like, okay, best player there, do we take him?
Yeah.
I noted that they took their sweet time, which tells me they were, one, evaluating their options, and two, potentially fielding offers if there was anything, any potential trade down available. But ultimately, nothing panned out in that regard.
No, but what was it, 10 seconds to go left on the clock when they sent it in?
Right.
According to Maccagnan, he was the number three player on their board. So the other two must have been gone. And when he dropped, they must have been licking their chops.
Yeah, absolutely, Biff. So one player, a little bit on the Harrison pick in the fifth round. From what I do understand, and I don't know a ton about him either, but he started 38 games with Texas A&M, and he's definitely has the talent. The big question on him, based on the scouting reports, is does he have the motivation? He's kind of considered one that may not like football as much as some other sports, but he's very naturally talented at it. It's definitely going to be a motor question, see how we could motivate him. But talent-wise, as a guard, he's as good as you could get in the fifth round at that spot.
Yeah, I've heard he was rated as a second-round talent. But the Jets got him in the fifth round, which could end up being a steal.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite picks. If they could find a way to get him motivated, and maybe those concerns are overblown, You know how things tend to be a little overblown there. I find nothing wrong with that pick at all. The Petty pick is interesting to me. So I had kind of said, you know, I probably would have gone with a offensive lineman of some kind at that point. But you can't kill it. It's not like we totally overdrafted Petty. You know, if he went a round too early, that's fine. But a lot of people, like you had mentioned, were talking about Bryce Petty being gone in the second or third round, which to me would have been overdrafting him. Paying a seventh rounder to Jacksonville, which we picked up from Houston to move up one spot, to make sure that Cleveland or some other quarterback needy team didn't come over us and take him. The Jets identified a player that they liked. They gave up barely anything. The pressure's not on him because he's only a fourth-round pick, and he'll have time, hopefully, to sit back and learn and, you know, just take him off the table for this year. That's my biggest hope, so he can learn.
Yeah, I also like Devin Smith, second-round pick. What do you think of him?
Well, yeah, we were actually just talking about Devin Smith, and I think he gives us that speed wide receiver that we have not had for a very long time, to be a perfect complement to stretch the field when you know, compared to Marshall and Decker, who are more kind of overall polished wide receivers but don't have the speed necessarily that a Devin Smith offers. I think he could contribute right away as kind of a fourth wide receiver, and he could also help. He was exceptional in special teams at Ohio State.
He's got great hands, especially when the ball's coming from deep. He's really, really good at tracking the ball. I've hardly seen him dropping a ball. And, it's been missing in the Jets. But I'm not expecting too much this season.
Right. And that's the thing with a lot of the players in this draft. I mean, we selected a lot of great value picks, but they don't have to. Well, outside of maybe Molden, I think he might need to help out a little bit more urgently just because it's a position of need. But a lot of the other guys don't have to come in and be the savior right away. They can take time to develop under the normal rookie curve, whereas in a couple years past, we were drafting guys, and it's like, hey, you're saving us. You're our starting cornerback. You're our starting safety. Here you go, kid.
Yeah.
Have fun. So I think it's a great strategy.
No, the big question
essentially because of the fact that now we could actually go ahead and bring these guys and give these guys a chance to develop and grow within the system. You know, when you have to take these kids and throw them into the deep end of the pool, you know, right away, like Carlos alluded to, it's going to create problems, because then that's how you shatter a team's confidence.
Yeah, and as well as that, with Leonard Williams, there's been an awful lot of chatter about trading Mo Wilkerson. I can't see that happening at all. Why would you get rid of your best players? Why not stock up on really talented players?
So I wanted to ask you, best talk about Mo Wilkerson and the selection of Williams, and I think most fans agree, you know, it's great having what many consider the best talent in the draft overall, like falling to the Jets at six. But how would you mix him into this rotation? And then I want to ask you about the Mo Wilkerson issue. But first, how would you bring him along into this system?
Well, I reckon Bowles is going to go between 3-4 and 4-3. He's going to mix it up. And then I think he might use him as a rotational player as well at the start. Given he might actually push Mo Wilkerson to become better. Sheldon Richardson as well, and Snacks. Plus, Snacks' contract is up next season, so they don't really have to fret about re-signing him, because they have Leonard Williams there. Plus, they brought in that guy, Simon, that I never heard of anyway. I think they're just going to switch them around, keep them all fresh. Leonard Williams can move all over the place as well. And that's the best thing about having the likes of him, Mo Wilkerson, Richardson. These guys can move all around the D-line. Plus, you have Copels as well, which can play with his hand in the dirt. So I think this defensive line is going to be extremely scary. What about yourself?
Well, CJ, I'll let you answer Biff's question first, since I've been kind of jumping over you today. So you go ahead and answer him there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
You there?
Yeah.
By the
okay,
way,
can I wave you guys?
Hands off Snakey, buddy. Come on. Go with it.
Nah, just getting another cup of Joe over here.
Oh,
so, okay.
While you guys were having your exchange back and forth over there, I've been manning our Twitter feed over here. I just want to give some people some love over here. Jimmy Boyd from One Jet Drive. Also, one of our other listeners over there, Haas, who I mentioned a little bit before, New York Jets fans, over at Twitter, showing us some love. So we got some love going on here this morning over here that I'm feeling. I'm definitely feeling the love over the airwaves.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's great having all the interaction on Twitter. Biff was asking about kind of the Leonard Williams mixing him in. He was kind of trying to get your thoughts on it too, CJ, and also how that impacts the Mo Wilkerson. I think from a contract perspective, not that it gives the Jets a ton of leverage. I don't want to see Mo Wilkerson go anywhere. But I think it gives them a chance to sit back and say, you know what, we don't have to overpay. We could take our time. We have you under contract this year. I don't want to see him hold out or anything like that. But it gives them just a little bit more hand in that regard by having another player that could come in potentially. And that's the thing, is potentially. We don't know what Leonard Williams will be. We know what Mo Wilkerson is. And I know that I'd love to keep him as a Jet for life. But realistically, down the road, you're not going to be able to keep all of these guys in a couple of years. And so
no.
You have to start thinking long term. And that leads me to the question I want to ask you, Biff. What is the price? You know, so what would you accept if you were trying to trade Mo Wilkerson, not in a position of weakness by any means, not in a, oh, gosh, I got to get rid of him, but what would the price be to get a player like Mo Wilkerson traded? You know, is it first round pick? Is it a couple first round picks? Is it multiple picks down the road?
I can't see them getting a couple of first rounders, but maybe a first round, maybe a few others in a package, maybe a player in a package. Depends on who's looking for them. If you have a team that's going bonkers to get them, you could end up robbing the eye out of their head. But it's a hard one to answer at this time, because he could come out next season and have a huge season on a contract
right.
year. He could bomb. You don't know.
Right. And the thing with Mo Wilkerson, and the problem is when you try, you know, when agents are looking at the stats, they look at the sacks and the pressures, and while Mo Wilkerson and a lot of players like him do get sacks, but they don't accumulate the monster sack totals you see from some of these other players, but they do a lot of other things so very well that are underappreciated. They get the rush on the passer, also do an excellent stop at stuffing the run and taking multiple offensive linemen away from some of his other teammates. That goes underappreciated in the box scores. And ultimately, it leads to a slightly lower price in terms of your average year salary. But I would love to keep Mo. I would love to keep Mo Wilkerson on for life. I don't know if that's a realistic possibility, but I think the Jets still have some time before they really decide. I don't think that they have to make a quick decision now on that, which they bought themselves a little bit of time with the draft.
You want to know something, Carlos?
Oh,
odds are you
want
to know that they're not going to get rid of Mo Wilkerson. I mean, like I alluded to before, I don't know if Biff caught the opening statements of the show, but as I had said before, I could definitely see them reworking Mo Wilkerson's contract. He's going to get paid. He's going to be a part of the Jets' future as much as Leonard Williams is. You know, I could realistically see them keeping Mo Wilkerson because he's got his niche here, okay? He's made himself as a standout. He deserves to get paid. I have a feeling that Mike Maccagnan will do right by him. They will give him a good contract to keep him here. I don't see them parting with Mo Wilkerson unless, like I said, again, I hate to use the line from The Godfather, somebody comes along with an offer they can't refuse.
So tell me this, what do you think he's going to be looking for contract-wise?
I don't know if he's going to be looking for J.J. Watt money, but I think he'll definitely be up there. I think he. I wouldn't be surprised if he if the Jets could possibly offer him a contract, you know, similar to something that they offered Darrell Revis.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he'll try to get J.J. Watt money, but I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you're going to pursue as much as possible. I don't think he'll get that. But you know, if we're talking about his price went up too. Here's the problem: is we've kicked this can down the road for the past 2 years, and now his value's gone up. You know, we could have gotten him for maybe $11-12 million a year or two ago. Now I'm thinking more like 13-15 is probably what he's going to be looking for. And that's a problem when you kick the can down the road and you don't address an issue head on. We could have solved this problem before it ever became a problem.
Yeah.
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, the regime that was in place prior to the one that we have now was not exactly smart enough to get this problem out of the way. So, like you said, it wouldn't become a problem. Okay. John Idzik was such the tightwad, okay, in trying to save as much money under the salary cap as he could, you know, bringing in garbage players. You know, trying to patchwork a team with duct tape and spit instead of going out there and actually getting some talent, you know, it begs to differ. Look, in order to make money, you got to spend money. Okay, you have to reward good play.
Okay, have you seen any of the undrafted free agents yet?
Actually,
Carlos, I believe, has a whole list up there.
I've got the list right in front of me, man. You're the perfect segue machine. I don't even need to work at this right now. That's exactly what I wanted to hit up. You're just making my job easier. We basically covered the entire draft with you, so excellent. Yeah, there's a number of them, and unless there's some more activity, this is from earlier this morning.
Okay.
And maybe we could get your thoughts on some of these guys. I'll admit there are some of I have no idea who they are, but let's start off with Jake Heaps. He's a quarterback. He's going to be in. He's going to be camp body, basically. He was a pretty talented kid coming out of high school, but never really panned out. He's played for three different schools in BYU, Kansas, and then his last year at Miami as kind of a backup. He threw 14 passes. You know, he'll have a chance to maybe compete to maybe get some reps in the off season, but he's not going to be in the plans, if you ask me. But, you know, they bring him in. A lot of defensive linemen and defensive ends in particular were brought in. So I'll name off a few, and then we'll see if we can get your thoughts on them. Julian Houseware, Deion Barnes, and Jordan Williams are the defensive ends that I've seen. Williams being out of Tennessee, anyone familiar with the SEC would probably know of him. Barnes being out of Penn State, and then Houseware being from Clarion, which I frankly have to admit – I thought it was a hotel, not a college.
Okay.
really?
Yeah, I'm trying to get up.
Where's Clarion? You tell me where Clarion is.
I couldn't tell anyways, you, dude. I'm going to be honest with it.
All right, let's have our esteemed guest kind of give us his thoughts on some of these guys.
All right, Jordan Williams from Tennessee, never heard of him. So I can't answer that.
Okay.
What else was there?
Right. Deion Barnes from Penn State.
No, I don't see him on the list either. But,
all right,
a lot of these players you never heard of.
Right. That's, well, there's a reason they're undrafted free agents, right?
Okay. Can I give you a couple of players I know instead? I seen the got Wes Saxton from South Alabama, tight end. this guy is, I wouldn't call him a speedster, but he'd be very like Amaro. You can split him out. He could end up coming in and getting rid of Cumberland in the long run. So
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I like him. Plus, there was an awful lot of the media guys on NFL Network going on about him going between round 5 to round 7, and he could be a steal. So the Jets got him in on draft of free agency, which could end up being a major steal for them. Now, who else was there I seen? There was Taiwan Jones, inside linebacker from Michigan State. I was banging the table for the Jets to draft him in the 7th round out of one or two picks, but they ended up getting him in undrafted free agency. He reminds me a bit like Harris. He's a run stuffer. He's big. He could sit behind Harris now for a couple of years and come in and take his place, which might work out to be a good thing as well. There was another guy called Eskridge. He's a safety from Syracuse. He's 6 foot plus. He's very raw, free safety. And he was said to go between round 3 and round 5. I like this kid. And I think the Jets got another steal. Apart from that, I don't really know much about the other players.
No, yeah, the guys you hit on are actually, to me, more the highlights than the glut of defensive ends that these guys found underneath a bridge. Speaking first and foremost, I think Taiwan Jones, out of Michigan State, like you mentioned, the comparison to Harris, he could sit behind Harris. I think just based on positional need and youth, he has a pretty good chance, if anyone does, of being an undrafted free agent that could potentially be on the roster, or at least compete to be on the roster and maybe make the practice squad. He's got him and Saxton, I think, have the two most legitimate chances so far. Now, it's not to say that we're done signing undrafted free agents, but out of those, I like those two as well. So you hit right on them and perfectly. Saxton had a fifth round grade, just about, you know, fifth, sixth round. Pretty quick guy, kind of a little bit like Amaro. I agree with you with those guys. One of the things I wanted to get to, and when we get to the seventh round, now I know that it's being a bit nitpicky to start maybe tearing down seventh round picks, because I mean, let's face it, it's a seventh round pick. One direction I would have liked to seen us go, instead of taking Deion Simon, who's a big guy out of Northwestern State, another D tackle, I would have really liked to see the Jets pick up Gerard Holloman, free safety out of Louisville. I really would have liked to see him. He's almost the anti-Calvin Pryor. He may not be that great in tackling against the run, but he's a ball hawk. He had a ton of turnovers, like 14 interceptions over 2 years or something ridiculous. A true ball hawk, which is something we've not had in some time that we could have taken the time to develop. I would have liked the Jets to select him instead of maybe the D-tackle. But, you know, at this point, it's just kind of petty to really quabble over a seventh-round pick. I think the Steelers got a steal with that kid, though. Did you like the Holloman kid at all?
Yeah. The only thing I didn't like about him, he wasn't tackled. That's the only flaw. Of course, yeah, he is a ball hawk. If he was there in the seventh round, I would have loved the Jets to pick him and stash him and teach him how to tackle.
Right.
And later on down the line, he could be a big-time free safety for the Jets. Even a nice backup. But as you said, the Steelers got a nice deal there.
They did. They did. I wish the Jets would have used one of those two picks that they had, which leads me to the last transaction of the draft. So, and this is one that, you know, for a seventh-round trade and what we got in return, it's hard to quabble with it, but it's hard for me to really understand it, too. So the Jets traded their second-round pick, which they got from the Texans in the whole deal they did earlier in the draft, and where we got Maldon and the fifth rounder, et cetera. We traded that seventh-round pick for Zach Stacy, running back out of the St. Louis Rams, who basically pitched a Twitter fit the second Todd Gurley was selected number 10.
Yeah. First of all, when I seen it, I was scratching my head because the Jets have so many running backs at the moment. And he reminds me of kind of a faster version of the guy he got from the Patriots. What's his face?
Ridley.
Yeah. He reminds me of similar to him, but just a little bit faster. But the three or four running backs to have on the roster now are all in one-year deals. So that's including Ivory. Stacey is still on his rookie contract as well. So there's a couple of cheap years with him. It just looks to me like they're going to have a major battle with the running backs in camp summer, and the best three, maybe four, they're going to keep, and we could be saying goodbye to Billy Powell or...
I think everyone's in question right now. Really, I mean, so if you look at that trade, Ridley and Stacey do a lot of the same things. Ivory
yeah.
does, they're all kind of the same guy, and I guess what I would have liked to address was getting a running back that complements the power. Not that Chris Ivory's slow, not that Stephen Ridley's slow. I would argue Stacey's a little slow, in my opinion, but, you know, I've been burned in fantasy world with Zach Stacey from 1 year to the next, so
yeah.
maybe that's just some sour grapes there. But, you know, Zach Stacey's kind of a plodder. You know, he averaged, what, 3.9 yards a carry? He got overlapped by Trey Mason last year. I mean, he got benched by Jeff Fisher halfway through the year for not performing, and then Trey Mason went out there and made him look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I mean, you know, so Zach Stacy's just another kind of similar back. I would have preferred, again, this is a seventh-round pick, so take it for what it's worth. I'm not going to complain too much. I would have preferred getting a speedster running back maybe a little bit earlier in the draft, or at least looking at one in, you know, undrafted free agency. It's like these guys all kind of do the same thing. So this leads me to believe it's going to be a pure competition. Let the best three, four men win, like you were saying. And it also makes me wonder what the Jets think about Ridley's health as we approach the offseason.
That's true. That's the reason why I was scratching my head last night, because the three or four guys, they're all very similar. There's no real speedster, and there was no real speedsters in the draft apart from the Duke Johnson guy. And David Johnson.
Right.
I just think it's just going to be the best three is going to win, and the other guy's gone.
All right. Biff, well, one of our favorite draft experts that joins us fairly regularly, has his own show, No Fly Radio, along with Richard Tinley. Go check it out, everybody. One person I want to ask you about, the Jets didn't draft him. Every team, all 32, passed on this guy seven times, and he's sitting out there as an undrafted free agent, offensive tackle at LSU. I mean, he's got first-round talent, but Lael Collins, with all the off-field stuff going on with him, I mean, if what happened to him is not true based on, you know, the reports that are going on as far as he's not really involved in this murder thing going on with his baby mama or girlfriend, whatever, it's a travesty for him if he just really got screwed in terms of his draft value. But right now, as it stands, he can't re-enter the draft because he would only been able to re-enter the draft if he was drafted by somebody this year. He's an undrafted free agent right now from what at least the last I had seen. I don't know if anyone signed him yet or not. But what do you think about that kid and maybe taking a chance on him in a position of need, I think, which is depth across the offensive line?
From what I've heard this morning, it's going to come out tomorrow if he's clear. Now, if he's clear tomorrow, an awful lot of teams are going to be going bonkers to get him. And if the Jets, touch wood, end up getting him, that would be major, major coup. I'd do hands down. Because I was banging at the table for the Jets to trade back and take him in the first round. So, but to be honest, I think he's got, he'll have a lot of teams there looking for him, and he wants to go to a team that's going to be Super Bowl ready, like the Seattle Seahawks or maybe Green Bay. Some teams like that now. But if the Jets get him, as I was saying, I'll do handstand and I'll do dance. How about yourself?
All right, Biff. So before we let you go, because we got a couple other things we want to hit, and quite frankly, our schedules are a bit tight today. We're going to be doing a little bit quicker of a show than we normally do. Wanted to ask your overall, and I know it's silly to give a grade. I don't want to give you a grade, but your overall impressions of the draft. Are you satisfied with it? Is it better than you expected? You know, just kind of give your last thoughts on the overall draft so far this year. And then can you give out your contact information and also the you know, the shows, the No Fly Zone website, et cetera, anything associated with that?
Sound. I personally was trying my best to calm down during the week and not expect too much out of this draft because of our last few drafts and GM, because usually when we get past the second and third round, we're screwing up. So with the picks that McKagan made, I was delighted. And this draft, personally, I'm giving it an A. To rise to it being an A plus, depending on how many players end up being starters. I'm going to head off now just in a second. You can reach me on Twitter at @BiffRoomJess. Or the show is at @NoFlyZoneRadio.
Biff, I have one last question. Did you guys do a new one? I've only heard two. Did you do a third? Because I was looking at the list and I haven't been able to check it out.
We've done a third Wednesday evening, which we just done a bit of a mock on, a bit of a big board and first round mock draft, and that was really it, just on the build up of the draft.
All right, well, I'll be listening to it at work at some point this week, so I'll definitely be able to check it out. Great stuff you guys do over there. I want to thank you for joining us today, Biff. Any other parting shots before you take off?
Sorry? Hello?
All right. Wonderful. Thanks for joining us today, Biff.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a fine Sunday.
All right. I'll send it back.
All right, Biff, thanks for joining us.
Good evening, guys. Bye-bye.
All righty. Take care.
All right, Biff Sweeney, No Fly Zone Radio, one of our favorite pods over there in the UK. Actually, the way I see it, I think pretty much the only one going right now.
Yeah.
Great stuff him and Rich Tinley do over there. Definitely draft Hawks in their own right. All right, so we're going to be wrapping up the show a little earlier today than we normally do. CJ's got stuff to do. I've got stuff to do. Want to enjoy the rest of our Sunday. But one last minute thing I wanted to announce, because it's kind of late breaking, but it's a huge opportunity for us, and there'll be more details to come. But CJ, we're kind of going to be affiliated with a group of great Jets fans on a website. It's called NewYorkJetsFans.com. We've actually been approached by a great group of people that's putting this all together. It's going to be a website for Jets fans, by Jets fans, with nothing but top-notch content. They've already got Coach Ron Pickett associated with them, Tyson Roush, L7 Panda, and we're actually going to be joining them in some capacity in the next few weeks, and I'm very excited about that.
Yep, absolutely. This is it's going to be a great opportunity. We're very proud to be affiliated with everyone that's partaken in this project. Details are still, you know, being hammered out and so on and so forth, but once they do, you know, obviously, you know, there'll be a huge launch and so on and so forth, but we're very excited to be a part of this project that's being put together. And you know that there are a lot of great people involved. You know, like we said, it's going to be for the hardcore New York Jets fan. you know, and they're getting tired of the Rich Simonis and the Manish Mehtas of the world. You know, we're finally going to give them a legitimate alternative to, you know, Dumb and Dumber over there at ESPN and the Daily News. You know,
yeah. I mean, and that's not to say there's not other great Jets websites out there, but what I think what the best point for this is, we're going to have kind of a one-stop shop for really anything you want with the site. Again, stay tuned. There'll be more details later. I wanted to make sure it was okay to even say something, but I kind of just shot off the mouth first. Because, CJ, I don't know about you, but I think we're going to be taking just a small hiatus next week, as there's not going to be a whole lot to talk about. Draft's over. There's not a whole lot more to talk about. So we're going to be taking just a small hiatus from the show, try to go enjoy our loved ones and all that fun stuff. But I did want to mention that the NewYorkJetsFans.com, I mean, those are the guys that brought us, you know, FireJohnIdzik.com, basically. So, you know, as you remember, we were one of the first people to reach out to Jay and the guys and try to hear their opinion about what's going on with the Idzik thing. They've been great towards us, and they've really done a great job organizing Jets fans for all kinds of good stuff. And this is just another level, I think. So I'm very excited about this. Going to be a wonderful opportunity for everyone involved. And, you know, it's going to be fun. So look, stay tuned for that stuff.
Absolutely. I think this is this, again, is going to be a – you know, it's going to be a tremendous opportunity, I think, and plus on top of it, you know, we'll be able to deliver some quality New York Jets content to the hardcore New York Jet fans and so on and so forth, which actually, believe it or not, kind of segues out to one of our closing segments that we like to do, and this one is going to be called the Jets Time Capsule, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, perfect.
And I've actually picked a particular game, okay? You don't hear this game talked about a lot, but believe it or not, because of this game and because of the circumstances surrounding this game, it led to widespread changes in how, believe it or not, football games are now televised here in the NFL. Some diehard Jet fans will know exactly what I'm talking about, but for those, for the casual fan that maybe have only started following the team within the last 10 to 15 years, probably do not know much about this game. But to diehards like myself and others, the list probably goes on and on. Even our buddy Jimmy Boyd, who's been a Jet fan for 50 years, you know, he probably remembers this game. This game is lovingly dubbed the Heidi Bowl. Okay? This was a contest between the New York Jets and the Oakland Raiders, okay, in which the game was played on November 17th of 1968. The Oakland Raiders were the home team. They defeated the New York Jets 43-32 in this game. Now, you probably say, okay, well, what's so special about this game? Well, let me tell you why it's dubbed the Heidi Bowl, okay? The game is remembered for the exciting finish, number one, because Oakland scored two touchdowns in the final minute to overcome a 32-29 New York Jet lead, okay? But that's probably not really the most significant point. The most significant point is that at this time, the NBC network was then responsible for AFC, for the AFC or then AFL games, and the NBC network decided to not show the end of this game because at 7 p.m., the movie Heidi was scheduled to be shown from 7 o'clock on. So a lot of people watching this game on television did not get to actually see the end of this game, but obviously had to read about it next day in the newspapers and so on and so forth. And ever since then, this game has lovingly been dubbed the Heidi Bowl. When you had a New York Jets Oakland Raiders game that was preempted so that way a movie named Heidi could be shown, because that apparently was more important than that's showing the Jets-Raiders game. Okay, so I'm sure that other Jets fans, if they would have actually gotten to see the ending of that game, would have probably thrown a rock through the television, as I probably would have. I think I was a little bit too young for that. But so I wasn't even born for that. But if I was around, I probably would have thrown a rock through my television.
So, I would have kicked my mother from inside the womb because there was no chance in heck I would have been any older than a fetus in 1968.
Exactly. So, you know, unfortunately what they did was they decided to postpone the start of the film. This apparently revolutionized the way NFL games are now shown today, in which now what they do is whatever regularly scheduled programming is scheduled to start at that time slot, if the football game, which is being televised live, is still going on or runs longer, what they do is now they created the phrase, we now start our regularly scheduled program already in progress, thanks to the NFL. Okay, so I want to read an interesting excerpt really quick. Obviously, let me find the spot here. In the late 1960s, few professional football games took longer than 2.5 hours to play, and the Jets-Raiders' three-hour television time slot was thought to be adequate. However, in this instance, us got a high-scoring contest between the two bitter American Football League rivals, together with a number of injuries and penalties, caused the game to run longer than expected. Although NBC executives had originally ordered that Heidi must begin on time at 7 p.m., as the time approached, it became clear that the exciting game would run too long. They decided to postpone the start of the film and continue the football coverage. However, when they tried to call the studio to implement their decision, they were unable to get through because there were so many members of the public were calling NBC to inquire, complain, or opine about the scheduled 7 p.m. cutoff that the NBC switchboards were jammed. As a result, the change could not be communicated, and Heidi began as scheduled, preempting the final moments of the game in the eastern part of the country to the outrage of viewers there, who missed two Oakland touchdowns that turned the game around. Like I said before, if I was alive for that time, and I probably would have seen it, I would have thrown a rock through my television. So again, a little bit on the Heidi Bowl in our New York Jets time capsule, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Excellent, excellent history right there. You always get a little bit of factoid knowledge that you may have forgotten or may not have known, even if it happened in the time of Moses or the dinosaurs roaming. It's still Jets history. All right, my friend. It is time for the segment we like to call, as we wrap up our show.
That's all I got.
That's right. It's time for That's All I Got. So I wanted to take the floor here and talk a little bit about the Bryce Petty situation. It's the most controversial pick, I think, in the draft. There's a ton of Jets fans that are for it and think that we need to bring in Bryce Petty and have him compete with Geno Smith right away. And to that, I say hogwash. The kid has never even forget the spread system. The kid never had a playbook. He's going to need some time. While I think it might be a good pick in the overall long run, if you even entertain putting Bryce Petty on the field this year outside of maybe the preseason, it's going to set him up for failure. And New York Jets fans, and really the Jets in general, we've been doing this the past two quarterbacks. We brought in Sanchez. He started right away. Look how that turned out. We brought in Geno Smith. He started right away. Look how that turned out. While we haven't invested the resources that we did in either of those two, in Bryce Petty, he's still a young kid that needs time to develop coming out of that spread Baylor offense. Give him the time. Do not chant for Petty the first second you see Geno Smith make a mistake. We have Ryan Fitzpatrick back there to help ease the transition if Geno Smith isn't going to be the guy. But for God's sakes, Todd Bowles, and Mike Maccagnan, I trust you guys to not throw this kid into the fire. That would be a mistake. And that, my friend, is all I got.
All right, excellent. True words were never spoken, my friend. So we could kind of talk everyone down from the ledge about Bryce Petty being selected. And believe it or not, Mike Greenberg from the ESPN network had even tweeted that he feels that Bryce Petty is going to be the Jets' starting quarterback in the year 2016 and that he hopes that he's wrong. And I responded with that the Jets have the luxury of being able to bring him together without having to throw him into the deep end. So, you know, everyone just needs to relax a little bit, pump the brakes on Bryce Petty getting the starting job for the New York Jets right now. Okay? So, It has now come to that time, ladies and gentlemen, where unfortunately parting is such sweet sorrow. But for my co-host, Carlos the Hitman Sardinas, this is CJ DeSimone, and this has been the CNC Football Factory. We will be back very soon. Keep an eye on Twitter to make sure that we'll keep
we're
you guys
behaving.
Posted when our next show is going to air and so on and so forth.
All that fun stuff.
Keep an eye out.
Trying to get
again.
It out. Yeah, you're stumbling. You're sputtering here right at the end.
I don't know, man.
Keep an eye out, NewYorkJetsFans.com. Check out all of our friends' websites, podcasts, everything else. Stay tuned for the next few weeks. There'll be some great, entertaining news coming out regarding that new initiative. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break over the next probably week or so until some more news comes out. So stay tuned for when we're going to be on air next. For CJ DeSimone, this is Carlos Sardinas, and Lonely Hearts, take us home.
Barker reminding you to help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
Hey, wait a minute. You two look kind of familiar. Ain't you them kids that have been slacking off in my tool shed?